Welcome in, everyone, to the 68th episode of... Oh, yeah. Toby's getting more and more excited as the weeks go on. The 68th episode of the Deep Dive Dynasty Podcast. As always, we are your two hosts, Toby and Colin. Toby, how have you been, man?
I've been fantastic. We have actual football news now, and it has really whet my appetite.
It's very true. We finally are getting some stuff we can really chew on, and it's only going to increase as training camps and everything gets started. This week, we are going to be doing a mailbag episode. As always, though, you guys can hit us up for any of your Dynasty questions at any time, and you can do so on Twitter at Deep Dive Dynasty or on Reddit. You can find us at u/DeepDiveDynastyPod. I'm often on r/DynastyFF, and that is actually where we are getting today's questions. So if you guys want to participate in stuff like this going on in the future, definitely hit us up over there. I think before we get into the mailbag, though, Toby,
we got to talk about the news.
We do, because in between when we recorded and released last episode, so the first thing on the docket, we missed by, I think, only like it was, 6 hours or something like that. Cam Akers with a torn Achilles.
So unfortunate.
Ruptured Achilles, I should say, but I mean...
Achilles injury, major.
Yeah, and it is a very significant hit to his dynasty value. And the problem with this injury specifically is that even like a torn ACL that you think, oh, that's a major injury, people don't come back from this injury. Like genuinely, Donta Foreman is seen as like the best example in NFL history for running backs who have come back from it.
And it's not a benchmark you want to be.
No, he did nothing after he got hurt. And he may have done nothing anyway. And there may not be that many examples of players as talented as Akers and as young as Akers and everything else, but there is genuine legitimate concern at this point that, sure, he's not going to play in 2021. He may not play in the same role that we were projecting him for this season ever. Like, it's possible that it never happens, and that is just the horrible luck that can happen with injuries in sports. He also could easily be the type of player to buck a trend, and he could come back in 1 year, or maybe even a little bit more than 1 year, and come back to being explosive, as we would all hope. I love Cam Akers, I love his talent, I hope he comes back, but we have to play this transactional game right now, and you've got to be able to put a value on Cam Akers.
Holy.
And that's really difficult.
So
right
difficult.
Now. He drops down significantly, like, very soon. In the episodes starting after this one, next week we're going to start to get into our dynasty rankings, and those are the things you have to factor in, because Akers, where he would have been, which, you know, floating around that, like, top 10, top 12 area, he's going to drop down way below that. So it's very difficult. We'll definitely get into it more when he comes up in our running back ranking episode, but...
It's also so much so that football is such a meritocracy in that he's out now. Let's say... Best case scenario, he's back in 12 months. Mm-hmm. Daryl Henderson could have broken out. Someone random like Funk could be stealing a bunch of touches. He's not going to walk into the same situation ever again. It's going to be evolving and changing. Mm-hmm. And while he's recuperating, you have other people having opportunities and getting better. Mm-hmm. So
and,
it's
and all of them could also flop, and he could end up in a similar or better situation.
Yes, that as well.
But we just don't know, and it's so hard to see the murky future for him. I do also think... Before we move on to the next piece of news, Daryl Henderson and the guys behind him are worth talking about, because Daryl Henderson looks lined up for a top 20 type of running back season in 2021.
He should be top 20.
I would agree. I expect him to have a significant amount of work. As of right now, Sean McVay says they're not interested in signing any veteran running backs that are on the market, and someone like Fournette could be cut, and that could change. Who knows? Todd Gurley could sign there tomorrow and we could have the same thing where news breaks halfway in between when we record and when we release. But as of right now, I think you just have to clearly project him as the guy. And then we missed the whole waiver wire rush to get these backups of the backup. But I think it's still worth taking that shot on either one of Funk or Xavier Jones.
Yeah.
How I view it right now is that everyone seems to be prioritizing Xavier Jones a little bit too much. I think it's pretty much a toss-up of who it could be.
I would agree on that. Next piece of news that we just missed again was that Aaron Rodgers, he's back for all intents and purposes. It's becoming increasingly likely. I would say it's overwhelmingly likely. Mm-hmm. He's back It's a last dance scenario. Him, Devonta Adams, Randall Cobb. I believe that it is going to be his last year with the Packers.
Mm-hmm. That's what everything's pointing to. And this episode's going to release on Friday. We recorded this a few days ago. So I would say the most likely scenario is you guys listening, you know the contract and how it's going to break down already.
I would assume so.
We do not. But unless there's something major that's different from that, you have to look at this in the way that, okay, you've got Aaron Rodgers there for 1 year and Jordan Love probably beyond. Aaron Rodgers is going to go somewhere else and still be very good. Devonta Adams also, who knows how his contract talks are going, apparently not so good that he is going to be on the last year of his deal. And then, you know, there's already rumors swirling that, oh, him and Rodgers can just go and leave together and they can join a different team and be the dynamic duo. The only thing in the way is that the Packers can still franchise tag him after the conclusion of this season.
I bet you they will, too.
It makes sense, like, of what you could lock in probably the best wide receiver in the league at a level that's, you know, just one of the best contracts. It's probably in their best interest to keep him around, unless he makes it clear he's not going to report or something. But yes, it's good for all of the receivers around Green Bay, and very interesting to look at both Rodgers and Devonta Adams' value beyond just this year. Next up, I think we should talk about the fact that Michael Thomas is going to be out for a lot of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it really changes everything in that offense, because even looking at someone like Winston and Taysom Hill, to me, like, when your weapons beyond Kamara are Tre'Quan Smith and Troutman and Harris. And
it's such an unbelievably uphill task now for either of those quarterbacks that both of the value has to go down, obviously.
Yeah, I would say Taysom Hill. You mean he can get you some points with his legs, which makes a huge difference. And honestly, I think this might even push the needle a tiny bit towards Taysom Hill being the starter, because you can run an offense with him and Kamara running a ton, and obviously Latavius Murray too. But yes, with Michael Thomas, the present is what's most important, even in Dynasty. So that is a huge hit to his value as well. He's another guy that's really difficult to value against the field now, because you know you're not going to have him until deep into the season. So sure, he might help you out if you're in playoffs, but it's unclear if he'll be able to help you get there. And that is huge. We also don't know how this could affect him long term. Obviously, it's another surgery. Definitely a lot more risk attached to Michael Thomas now. And again, we're going to get into our rankings and get deeper into these wide receivers, running backs. So we'll probably talk about this guy more and more in a couple weeks when he comes up in the wide receiver episode. Other smaller pieces of news, you have Anthony Miller going over to the Texans, which I think is interesting. Obviously exciting for Darnell Mooney and even a player like Cole Kmet, that they don't have that one extra obstacle. And then in terms of the Texans side, Anthony Miller has an opportunity. Obviously, now they just lost Cobb as well, so you pretty much have him, Cooks, and maybe Nico Collins.
The Houston Texans will be the wasteland for fantasy in this year, though. It is dire straits in all things Houston football.
Uh-huh.
But I do agree that because of that, we need to throw to somebody. From somebody. Like, Tyrod Taylor, he's going to be under pressure constantly if he can develop rapport with Miller. Could be a steal, because I don't want him. Like, sure. I don't think anyone really, like, wants him as a player and as an asset. But there comes a time when you're at the bottom of the barrel.
He has slight opportunity now. Yeah. And if you're just looking at the asset you had in Anthony Miller, this is probably a team I would choose for him to go to, because he's got some options. And yeah, before I, you know, bury the lead, sticking on this team, the amount of Deshaun Watson news is very interesting right now, because it's starting to look like he'll be able to play in 2021.
It's a bizarre world we live in.
Uh-huh.
In that, I think he will be forgiven, and I think he will sign and continue.
Well, it's irrelevant if he's forgiven.
It is, but I think that, like, the league isn't going to impose a suspension, is what I'm saying.
I still think they absolutely might, because we've seen them with weird scenarios like the Zeke scenario just retroactively do things. So I'm not confident at all that that's just he's going to be fine, but it's trending way more towards the fact that he could actually play, whereas for a while it looked like there was very little chance. As soon as Deshaun Watson's on the field, he is a top five quarterback in Dynasty. He is,
regardless of the team, I would say.
Realistically, almost every situation will be equal or better than the one he was in.
Yeah, that's very fair.
So yeah, he's not going to start for the Texans because he really does not want to play there, but I could easily see him landing on a lot of rosters. Obviously, Philadelphia has been rumored. There was even some Green Bay rumors. I don't know if that's going to stop now. I was thinking about this. What if you did some sort of trade of Jordan Love for Deshaun Watson so that you know Watson's not going to be able to play this year, so you have Aaron Rodgers for your 1 year, and then you just seamlessly switch from Aaron Rodgers to Deshaun Watson.
That would be some of the dirtiest GM play. It would be amazing.
Yeah, I feel like the NFC North fans are like, ugh, don't do that. And I think that's all of the major pieces of news that I can think of that we definitely need to touch on. As soon as anything comes up, you can find us on Twitter. I'm always reacting to stuff and, you know, giving them my dynasty takes on it. Let's move into our mailbag, though. We got a good amount of responses from you guys, and I definitely want to answer every one of these questions.
Let us begin with a man named Mr. Doof 105. He's in a Superflex league. His question is, what's Jordan Love's value going forward? Should we just try to add him in on trades? Should we just wait and hold? And I guess this was 7 hours ago, so this is after you understand that Aaron Rodgers is going to come back. My prognostication is that Aaron Rodgers only has 1 year left. I think right now, while Aaron Rodgers is going to be signed and going to come back, you want to get Jordan Love sooner rather than later if you believe in him as an asset. Mm-hmm. You don't want to wait till January when Rodgers at a press conference says, yes, this is the last time I'm playing at Lambeau Field. If you believe in Jordan Love and you want him, then you want to get him, honestly, this offseason would be the ideal time.
Yeah, so really smart owners of Jordan Love will understand that you're just waiting a year. And if you want to see exactly how I am treating Jordan Love in terms of, you know, you said if you believe in him as an asset, I don't. Mm-hmm. But that I'm still 100% going to go after him because he can put up fantasy points.
Yeah.
So it's worth trying to go by to see how that person values him, because if they aren't really looking ahead and they're thinking, ah, damn it, now Aaron Rodgers is back and he signed, and that somehow decreases Jordan Love's value, this offseason overall should have increased Jordan Love's value by a good amount, because at the start of the offseason, we weren't sure if Aaron Rodgers was going to be around for 4 more years. Now it's looking clear that he's only going to be around for 1. So he's definitely a good buy for me right now. And I guess that would also mean hold and just wait a year, because his value will be a lot higher as soon as he's named a starter. Next up from Lax Kid, the question is about Marquise Brown. He says that he's always, you know, been very high on the guy, but now they bring in Bateman, first rounder, Sammy Watkins, and they were even into Juju early in the offseason. So what are we doing with Hollywood Brown? We're trying to trade him now or hope that it'll gain some value sometime soon?
We actually had a comment to this comment, which is interesting, from YouAreWrong69. And this user says, are they actually trying to replace him? I think they simply needed to add receivers, so they did. They had Brown and no one else. I agree with YouAreWrong69 to an extent here, because yes, it was Marquise Hollywood Brown, Willie Snead, Mark Andrews kind of versus the world. So yes, they needed to bring in wide receivers, but it's a bit of a double-edged sword because they needed to bring in wide receivers because Marquise Hollywood Brown is not the alpha that he was drafted to be. Be it because of his stature or just his production levels, he has not leveled up in the NFL the way I think the Ravens wanted him to. That's why you're correct in saying they were even trying to get Juju. They're bringing in Sammy Watkins. They're drafting people pretty early. Marquise Hollywood Brown is not going to be a dominant wide receiver for the Ravens. Not only is the scheme of the Ravens working against him, but now they've brought in so much target competition that I think he'll be a more efficient player and he'll help out the Ravens as an asset. In terms of your love for this man, just quell it. Maybe don't be going after him with, you know, huge trade offers, because when you ask, you know, will he gain value sometime soon? I do not think he's going to gain value sometime soon. I think he's lost value this offseason, and I think the only way he gains value is with a really productive year.
Yeah, I think he's a roster clogger at this point, honestly, as unfortunate as that is, because he is talented in a way. He just so much does not profile as the type of guy who's going to get a lot of targets. And what you were talking about with, sure, they didn't replace him, they replaced the assets around him, but they replaced those assets around him with players that actually could see a high amount of target share. My issue is that Bateman and the continuous emergence of Mark Andrews is just going to continue to force those targets away from Hollywood Brown. And although he'll see those few deep targets as he's sprinting down the field, I don't see him ever profiling in as fortunate in a situation as he just was. And he still wasn't that dynasty relevant. Honestly, you never wanted to be starting him this past season. So sure, his value has fallen, I would say, quite a lot. I just don't expect it to be going that up that much. So honestly, I'm looking to include him in trades to get him off of my team, because I just don't think he's going to provide a lot of dynasty value. The next question comes from Send Photo Please, and it says, I didn't specify what kind of picture. I'm going to send him a picture of a football. Do you have any picks for the next surprise out-of-the-blue breakout? Think of guys like Logan Thomas, Darren Waller, Austin Eckler, Miles Gaskin, Adam Thielen, etc. So what that group of players all has in common is a distinct lack of draft capital. So it's not just someone that we currently undervalue. Like, I think people could say, like, oh, like Henry Ruggs or whatever. He was, yeah. You know, he's now going so late and he could explode. Sure, but this group, these are like undrafted guys. These are people that are just totally off the radar. I think Robert Tonyan could also definitely be added to this list. Toby, do you have a name that you think has that opportunity to truly explode?
I have one of the ultimate deep shots here.
Okay.
Undrafted free agent in 2020, Marquez Callaway. Marquez Callaway has absolutely explosive speed. He was actually signed by the Titans and did barely anything other than a few highlight returns. And then is now with the Saints.
Well, he was last year, at least for part of the year. So was he waivered?
Yeah, he was waivered. He's now with the Saints. He was just originally signed by the Titans for a moment. He's with the Saints. And when you are with the Saints in this odd transition of a year to new quarterbacks, now you know you're not going to have Michael Thomas. He has pretty impressive athletic measurables. And there just is that slim chance that you take a guy who is extremely athletic and you go, well, I'm going to put this guy in the slot and hope he can, you know, take some 80 yarders to the house. And he just starts doing it, you know? It's a stretch. But if I'm trying to find a guy that had the absolutely meteoric rise and fall, such as Darren Waller, I think Marquez Callaway is one of those guys. And he's not even a rookie. There's no rookie hype. So he's absolutely dirt cheap. I wouldn't be surprised if he's on waivers in some places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm sure he is. Although that Michael Thomas news, I'm sure he trended up quite a lot. One guy that came to mind for me was drafted in the same year, 2020, except he was actually drafted just in the sixth round. And that was a player that we did actually quite like the college tape of, and we were into him in the pre-draft scouting period last year, and it never really came to fruition in his first year. He got some work, but I don't think he looked incredibly impressive on an NFL field in his first year. This is Joshua Kelly. And so Joshua Kelly, he is in a current situation where it is very likely that Eckler will not be one of those true bell cow guys. Sure, they have a slightly different scheme coming in this year because Anthony Lynn is gone, but I don't expect the coaching staff to then come in and give him a McCaffrey-level work share.
Yeah.
There will be someone spelling him a decent amount. Of course, also with any guy like this, Eckler could get hurt and you could potentially have a starter. What I like about Kelly is that his value is incredibly suppressed right now because people did not love what they see, and I agree with that. But it's basically going to be one of him or Justin Jackson who's very likely being in this number two role. Justin Jackson also, I don't know how long term this would be, but he was put on the COVID IR, you know, reserve list recently. So maybe just another little leg up for Josh Kelly. But I just want to see what I saw in college. If he's the type of guy that incredibly cheap right now, always has been incredibly cheap as he was a six-round pick, has that opportunity to be on the field, and if he can take that next step, level up a little bit, he could be the type of guy to explode a bit in 2021. Next up, we've got a, you know, somewhat long question. Asapletch?
He's written us a novel.
Asapletch. And, you know, I've interacted with this guy a couple times. I know he's a big fan, so we appreciate you out there.
You the man, Asapletch.
So this is a potential trade question, but it's got some wrinkles in there. The first thing that he wants to know is, going into next season, how do you toe the line between extending your contention window and going all in with your roster moves? So if you have like a decent team that's not at that very top end, How do you know when it's time to, you know, sell some futures and absolutely go for it? Or just continue playing the game, you know, drafting some rookies, see if you get some hits, and then continue your younger core into hopefully becoming that true absolute contender a few years down the line. So how I approach that, honestly, like, it's very league dependent, because you can be in a league where you've got a pretty good roster on paper, and, you know, it's the type of roster, sure, you go post it on social media and everyone's like, oh wow, that's such an amazing team. But a lot of leagues, you've got the like bottom three or four guys that are never truly contending, and you've got four or five of those type of teams where there's a clear group of guys who are going to be contending for the next group of years because their rosters are so clearly better developed. And so what I want to do when I'm deciding to make a move like that is become a clear favorite. Like, if I am truly going to be throwing some of my future away, I want to then be able to look at my team amongst the other contenders and be like, okay, yeah, as long as, you know, stuff moderately falls my way, I should have this best roster this year. I really should go for it. Also, these type of decisions are often better made mid-season because you have a much better idea of how your roster stacks up.
I also think, going back to the first ever year that Colin and I were Dynasty owners together, I would say we had a okay team, and we were competing, and we had that okay team. We took it into playoffs, won the whole league. You don't necessarily have to make some major acquisition or huge roster turnover to be competing. I think that Colin's correct in that if you're going to make those huge moves or sell some firsts, it better damn be that you're going to be the favorite next year. But if you're competing and you're still trying to, you know, get into playoffs, keep rolling with that team. Like, you don't need to be making the huge move unless it's going to genuinely impact your future.
Another thing before we move on to the second part of this question is that another factor that I consider is, like, how old is my core? Because I would say most of my dynasty rosters are built that I've got a good amount of upside, but I kind of always am on the younger side. I'm always cycling those older players so that I don't feel like my team is a year or two away from really dropping off. But that can happen. And you can be in a situation where you right now, you have a starting core four or five running backs, and maybe you've got McCaffrey, Derrick Henry, Ezekiel Elliott, and Aaron Jones. And you've got all four of those guys in your starting lineup every week.
Yeah.
And those four guys in like 3 years are not going to be very good. That's how quick it turns over. So in that scenario, you know, maybe your wide receivers aren't good. I'm willing to move some of that draft capital because it's like, if I get some good wide receivers here, I really should be able to win, and my window is only a year or two. So I might as well send it, go for it right now, because you're probably not going to be that good of a roster in a couple years anyway. So then you can rebuild then. Okay, the second part of this question is based off of that exact situation. He is currently sitting with a potential trade where he would be moving Aaron Jones and a first for AJ Brown. So he is looking at moving out of a better win right now roster to go to an AJ Brown, which you expect. AJ Brown's got 5 or 10 good years as a, like, top.
Great years, even.
So you're moving a first. You're moving Aaron Jones, who will likely be the more valuable asset for 2021, but you're getting AJ Brown. And I think what's important to note here as well is that he talks at the end of his comment about having the 107, the 109, and the 201. And so I assume those are the type of firsts. You're looking at one of those late firsts. That makes it much more realistic for me to make this move, because you're not necessarily getting rid of one of those very potential high-end picks. I would be nervous about making this move with a future first, because in the scenario that those future first, you know, you have a bad year and it becomes a very early first, then I don't like the deal for you. But looking over your roster right now, I don't think you are one of those true contenders right now, so I'm willing to take one of those later firsts that you've got right now, like the 109 potentially, packaging it with Aaron Jones because he might not have that much longer as that elite asset, and moving that for someone that I'm confident can help you win for a much longer period of time.
As a pledge, do this deal. You got AJ Dillon as your running back too, and that's highly problematic going into the season, no doubt about that. But I agree with Colin here in that the picks that you have And, you know, there's always that slim chance that Aaron Jones goes down and you just made a fool of whoever you traded with and you got A.J. Dillon and Barkley. That's
awesome.
A.J. Brown is the best asset to have there, and I think it's worth having a pretty shoddy running back to get A.J. Brown.
Sure. Here's probably the question that made me laugh the most as I was going through the comments today, you know, just seeing what we've got coming up. Zuchumber? I think Zuchumber.
Mm-hmm.
His question is simply, Justin Jefferson? And I also enjoyed that there was a response by a name I have seen before, and I know we'll ask a question later from same generic username that says, yes, please.
Yes, Justin.
So we talked about Justin Jefferson last episode. I don't know exactly what this question is asking. Justin Jefferson is a top five dynasty wide receiver.
Great.
He had 1,400 receiving yards last year, and that's producing very little over the first couple games. He also didn't score a crazy amount of touchdowns and still ended up as a top 10 wide receiver. So I expect him to end in a similar range again this year. He's definitely a dynasty asset I'm willing to go get. Unfortunately, everyone is very, very into Justin Jefferson right now.
Yes.
Like, we were just talking about A.J. Brown and what you'd have to give up to get a high-end asset like that. They're right about the same. I think ADP has Justin Jefferson going just barely ahead of A.J. Brown right now. So that's what you're looking at giving up, is like a very high-end running back one and a first round pick to go get one of these guys. So I don't think I'm currently paying what needs to be paid to get a Justin Jefferson in most scenarios, and yet I still really want Justin Jefferson on my team. You have any other succinct answers to this succinct question?
Justin Jefferson? Yes. He's going to be insanely expensive for anyone that drafted him and had that gut feeling. I'm proud of you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really have nothing to add there. Like, you're not going to be able to acquire him without burning your house down, so wait.
Sure, I've never heard that expression before.
Next question is from King Neb WSU.
Nebswoo.
Nebswoo says, any deep sleepers, rookie or vets, that you'd recommend? I'm looking at startup ADP 300+.
So yeah, I'm pulling the ADP of 300+ up right now.
Okay. Because, yeah, I don't have the 320s to 330s of ADP differentiated in my mind. Kellen Mond comes to mind. He's at 312. Kirk Cousins' longevity with the Vikings can't be forever, and Kellen Mond is the incumbent. He's also a pretty fantastic runner. You have a lot of backups right now that I feel like have a decently high draft capital, whereas Kellen Mond, the whole selection went kind of under the radar, and I don't hear a lot of people talking about him. Acquiring him now, while there isn't any camp hype, while he hasn't gone and even played a preseason game, not a bad shot to take. Obviously, depends on your team and your quarterback needs, but Kellen Mond, I like it.
Okay, I got two names I wanted to bring up here. You know, we were just looking over that ADP and had to scroll down past 300 just for you. One I talked about recently on our Dynasty Buy of the Week segment, and that is Harrison Bryant. So I really like the value there. I think he is way too low, going at 330 right now. And even slightly later than him at 336 is Kylan Granson. And Kylan Granson is a rookie that I really liked pre-draft as well. I think he's got a lot of upside as a receiver. He's not a huge guy, but he's a good route runner. Seems fairly refined in that way. And I think that he will get used a decent amount just as a receiver, which is all you're looking for, especially on a deep late pick tight end. And there's also a couple of narrative things I really like. I like that Frank Reich specifically really wanted Kylan Granson. You can watch some behind the scenes stuff on their draft, and he was someone that the head coach, the offensive mind, was really, really wanting to go get. I also don't have a ton of personal belief in Mo Ali Cox. Obviously, Jack Doyle isn't going to be around the league much longer, and Trey Burton is gone. So I think right away, Kylan Granson can have a role as this team uses a ton of tight ends. And those other players around the depth chart don't scare me off too much. I think he's going way too late. And if I didn't make it obvious, he's a fourth round pick to the Colts. He's definitely that type of sleeper pickup that I want to have at the bottom of all my rosters.
Same generic username, baby.
Mm-hmm. The next question comes from that same generic username. He says, maybe try and separate the hype on Kyle Pitts. What type of value does he have in a rookie draft in a league where you're starting two tight ends? Is it crazy to take him ahead of the Chase, Fields, Lance, Wilson, and the running backs? Honestly, in that type of tight end premium, there's a lot of leagues like that where not only do they maybe score a little bit more, but especially in these ones when you're starting even more than one, we know how much the value drops off at tight end. There's not that many of those elite guys to go around, and Kyle Pitts has a very good chance to go and become one of those elite guys. So just the guys that you were talking about, like, is it worth taking him over Chase? I think yes. I think it's not that unreasonable in any league to go Pitts over Chase. So in this type of league, I would have him ranked higher than I would Jamar Chase. Then you also say the quarterbacks here, everyone besides Trevor Lawrence, and I would definitely consider the Lance Field type guys because it's a position that's much more scarce, but quarterbacks don't hit at an incredibly high rate, and tight ends don't as high as running backs or wide receivers either, but in this type of league where the positional scarcity is quite similar, the fact that you're starting two tight ends and two quarterbacks, you know, it somewhat balances out. I think it's very reasonable to take Pitts ahead of all these guys. You mentioned pretty much everyone besides Trevor Lawrence. I don't even think it's that unreasonable to take him 101. So it is totally fine in my eyes. If you are feeling tight end needy, I'm assuming you're sitting here at the 102 or something, I'm very willing to go out and go take Kyle Pitts because his opportunity is just crazy, especially now that Julio Jones is gone.
By taking Kyle Pitts in a two tight end league gives you the wiggle room of taking a slightly more average other tight end while other teams are panicking trying to get their tight end one, and it's going to give you such an upper hand. Fantasy football, all about that positional advantage, and I think that's what you want. So I don't think it's that crazy. Our final question today is from Wipeton.
I'd say Whipton.
Whipton.
I could be wrong, but that's my guess.
Whipton is asking us, what are the steps you personally take when deciding whether or not your team is ready for contention? And based if it's ready or not, what do you do after reaching that conclusion to prevent being perpetually stuck in the middle of your league's standings?
So we kind of answered this a little bit in the first half of that other question, but I do think it's an important thing to bring up about being stuck in the middle of your league standings, because there are, in a lot of leagues, especially very competitive leagues, there's going to be a few people probably tanking, there's going to be a few people who have really built up a stud roster, and there can be times where you're stuck in the middle. And as Toby already mentioned, you can win being kind of stuck in the middle, but your chances aren't incredibly high. So it's not a spot that I ever really want to be.
Yes.
The only way I am happily, quote unquote, stuck in the middle is if I really like my roster, yet I've still accumulated enough future pieces that I think I can be a decent contender for a long time. But you still need to have a very reasonable shot. If you're looking at your roster and you're like, man, my chance of beating these guys are just so low. Like, they've got Dalvin and they've got CMC and they've got, you know, these two stud wide receivers, and I'm just here probably like sixth place. It's like, well, if you really think your chances are that low of beating them, I don't want to be stuck in the middle. I am willing to go tank. I'm willing to take those pieces that are decent that you have right now, especially ones that are going to expire somewhat soon, and move them for guys like maybe a Cam Akers. Maybe that's the type of guy, because he's currently putting up 0 points in your lineup, which is exactly what you want if you're trying to not win.
Correct.
And has a potential big boom of value in the future and could help you win when his age is more aligned with your window to actually win and beat these other super teams. So if that's the direction you're going in, that's totally reasonable. And as we mentioned before, it can be the other side where you're like, well, I just need to make this big splash and the CMC owner is looking to move on and tank. So I can just move, you know, this player and these two first picks. And once I have CMC, then I'm one of the true top dogs. That's a totally reasonable thing to take as well. You just have to be realistic in assessing your own lineup and seeing which path has a higher chance that you're going to win a fantasy championship. Because in the end, you know, you're probably playing leagues where you're putting some money down and you're trying to win money. And all you're doing is trying to position yourself so that you have the highest likelihood of that happening. In one scenario, you're making that more likely right now. And in the other one, you're making that more likely down the line. But either way, you want to pick the path that's going to make you the most likely victor of your league.
And if this scenario comes up, Whipton, if you have an aging roster that you still think actually makes you a huge contender, go all out, try and win it this year, and then if they all start retiring and you spend 1 year being terrible so you can tank and get other guys in your roster that make you a contender again, that's the way to do it. I have no issue if you feel your team is on the brink of being fantastic, getting some future picks away to ensure a victory. If there's ever a chance that you can maybe not go as far as to ensure a victory, but at least vie for that championship, always go do it.
Mm-hmm. There are now players, like I already bought Akers up. The exact same type of thing can be said with Henderson. Henderson's the type of player that should be moving hands right now, because if you are not really going for the win right now, you don't really want him on your team. And if you're going for the win right now, he's the perfect guy to get on your team. So all of these type of players, there can be so much shifting going around in your league at all times through trades that you can position yourself regardless of which of those two paths you decide is more likely to lead you to a championship. That's it, everyone, though. That is our little bit of a smaller mailbag this time. It was fun, though. I always like doing these episodes. Before we close this episode out, however, we, of course, have a Dynasty Buy of the Week, and it is Toby's turn, so he's put together five hints, and I'm going to guess it on the first one.
I'm 23 years old, mm-hmm. and at one point, I was a first rounder.
23 mm-hmm. was a first rounder. That meaning in ADP or in NFL
draft? NFL draft. At one point in time, there was an NFL draft, and in the first round, I was drafted.
Okay. Because he's only 23, that doesn't leave that many options. It could be Clyde Edwards-Helaire, as I believe he was drafted as a 22-year-old. It could easily be a quarterback. Could it be Hawkinson or Fant? Are they still that young? I think they easily could be. Those are kind of the people that I'm most looking at right now. I'm going to guess, based off the wording, it isn't a current first-rounder, so I'm going to rule that out. I am going to go with Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Not a bad pick. Speaking of things that are bad, though, here's my next clue. I scored 3 rushing touchdowns last year, and I'm 23 years old. I'm just reading this verbatim off my notes. My first hint says that I'm 23, and my second hint also reminds me that I'm 23.
Didn't realize that you said it twice.
Just didn't realize it.
Either way, that's enough information. He's a first rounder. He is definitely 23. He better be. I will come for you if he is not 23. And he scored 3 rushing touchdowns. Okay, that definitely makes me think it's quite likely that this is a quarterback we're talking about. 23-year-old, first round quarterback. I'm not 100% sure if Joe Burrow was 22 or 23 coming out last year. So he might already be past being 23, but it could be him. Could be Tua. I obviously don't remember exactly how many rushing touchdowns these guys scored. Could be Herbert. Could even be Jordan Love. Actually, no, it could not, because he definitely did not score 3 touchdowns. So it's going to be one of the other 3. I can remember Herbert rushing in touchdowns, but I feel like the one that you're most likely to be putting a dynasty buy on right now would be one of the other 2. So I'm going to guess between Tua and Burrow, I will guess Burrow.
Incorrect.
I saw that smile. It's Tua, isn't it?
No, it isn't. Let me rattle you with this one.
Okay.
My team's first round draft pick was a weapon that helps me out.
Is it Tua?
Yes, it is. You've done it. It is Tua. And listen,
flipped the coin and I guessed wrong.
Yeah, listen, that was very well reasoned. I'm impressed. Yes, he had an unreliable rookie season, and that's why his price will be lower than I think it should be. I had a great fifth hint about there's a little less magic in the locker room. Anyways, Fitzpatrick is gone. Tua has to be the big dog of the offense. Not only have they committed to him, but they've chosen to surround him with weapons. They went out, they acquired speed, and then more speed with Jaylen Waddle and Will Fuller. I believe that Tua's kind of quicker release and hitting guys in stride and getting some yak is going to benefit him hugely. Last year, apart from like Jakeem Grant type of scenarios, like Tua did not have all the help that he could have. I'm a believer in Miles Gaskin. I think the offense is going to be a bit better, and his wide receiving core is definitely going to be a bit better. Very excited for the prospect of Tua. I do not think he's sending this team to playoffs. Don't get me wrong. I don't think the Dolphins will be particularly great, but I do think that Tua's price is too low right now, and this is the time to go get him.
So I just looked up his ADP, and right now Tua is going between the 5th and the 6th round, right on that cusp, right on that turn, and I do think that's a pretty good value that you can pick up Tua, so I understand. Everyone is a little freaked out about what they saw. I am on the side that I think there's a bit of overreaction to the rookie season of Tua. If you look at him historically amongst, you know, just how rookie quarterbacks do in the NFL, recently we've seen more and more rookie quarterbacks like Justin Herbert, like Kyler Murray, like Deshaun Watson before he got hurt, for example, these guys are having much better immediate impacts. But Tua should not be ruled out as a solid starter because of one mediocre season. He also played okay in terms of record-wise. He just didn't actually, look that impressive. He definitely didn't to me. But I do think that the market, because it has shifted a little bit too far into not believing in him, I see the other quarterbacks he's ranked around, and I agree that he's a reasonable buy right now. So I can't hate on it at all. He's a risk. He's a dice roll right now because he could easily have a bad year, and then I think he would get replaced pretty quickly if he really doesn't show signs of improvement this year. But it would be kind of hard not to at least improve a bit when you look at his receivers last year, and it's not only that
experience
rookie.
Too.
Yeah, he's got Will Fuller. He's got Devontae Parker, who was his clear number one last year, and he's got Jalen Waddle. Like, those three wide receivers, you have a very solid tight end as well. He's got a pretty good cast around him to potentially level up. So I do think now is a very reasonable time to go off and get him. I hope he doesn't turn into, like, a Sam Darnold, as someone that I quite liked out of college and just never really came about. Maybe Sam Darnold won't be a Sam Darnold after this year. We'll find out.
We'll see.
That's it, everyone, though. That is our 68th episode of the Deep Dive Dynasty podcast. Toby, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, sir.
And to all of you, thank you so much for listening, and have a good one.
Peace.